Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. I'm James, joined as always by my brilliant co-host, Lisa.
Thanks, James. I'm excited about this topic. It's something that's making waves in education right now. We're talking about flexible grouping in the classroom.
Exactly. Flexible grouping is one of those strategies that, when used well, can make learning feel personal, fair, and incredibly effective for students. But Lisa, let's start with the basics. What is flexible grouping?
Great starting point. Flexible grouping is essentially a way to arrange students in different groups based on their needs, readiness, or interests, and it's designed to change over time. It's not just about putting fast students in one group and slow ones in another. It's much more dynamic and intentional than that.
Right. It's about creating the right kind of challenge and support for every student at the right time. And I love how it avoids the old, static labels like low or high. Instead, it's fluid. Students might be in one group this week and another next week, depending on what they need.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that learning isn't one size fits all. For example, picture a classroom where you've got a small group of students working with the teacher on a specific skill, another group collaborating on a project with assigned roles like timekeeper or presenter, and maybe a pair working quietly at a computer station. It's all about catering to different needs simultaneously.
That's such a vivid example. And it's not just about academics, is it? Flexible grouping also has social and emotional benefits, right?
Absolutely. Small groups can help build self-esteem and belonging, especially for students who might feel overlooked in a larger class setting. It also leverages social learning. Vygotsky, Kolb, and even modern brain research all point to the power of working interactively with peers to deepen understanding.
So, Lisa, let's talk about why teachers might decide to use flexible grouping. What are some of the triggers or signals they should look for?
Good question. One big signal is when formative assessments or exit tickets show a wide range of mastery, basically, when students are all over the place in terms of understanding. Another is when a summative assessment shows a big standard deviation, meaning there's a huge gap between the highest and lowest performers.
Right. And I imagine it's also useful when you notice a group of students getting stuck on the same skill, or even when you want to accelerate learning for those who are ready for more abstract work.
Exactly. And it's not just about academic readiness. For example, you might group students based on their interests to boost engagement, or even use small groups to support social-emotional needs, like giving shy students a safe space to participate.
That's really thoughtful. Now, let's break it down even further. What's the process for creating these groups? How do teachers actually go about it?
It's simpler than it sounds. First, diagnose. Use a quick quiz, an entrance ticket, or even just observation to identify where students are. You can calculate the class average or look at standard deviations if you like numbers. Next, decide the purpose. Are you reteaching, enriching, or maybe starting a project? Finally, form the groups and decide how long they'll stay together. Short cycles work well for skills, but projects might last a few lessons.
And I imagine the type of group you create depends on the goal, right? Can you walk us through some examples of group types and when to use them?
Of course. For targeted reteaching or enrichment, you might use readiness-based groups, where students are grouped by similar skill levels. For richer discussions or problem-solving, mixed ability groups work well, as stronger students can help explain concepts to others. Interest-based groups are great for boosting motivation, especially with projects or inquiry-based learning.
What about learning styles? I know Kolb's model is often mentioned in education circles. Does that play into flexible grouping?
It does. Kolb's learning cycle suggests grouping students based on how they process information. Some might prefer hands-on activities, while others thrive on reflective observation or abstract conceptualization. You can design stations or rotations to cater to these preferences.
And what about the social-emotional side? Are there specific groups for that as well?
Yes. For social-emotional support, you might create small, safe groups for students who need to rebuild trust or practice communication skills. These could be particularly helpful after a conflict or for students who struggle with participation in larger settings.
That's so thoughtful. Now, let's talk about the practical side of things. How do teachers design tasks that really make these groups effective?
Great question. For remediation groups, tasks should be short, scaffolded, and give immediate feedback. Think worked examples followed by guided practice. For enrichment, you'd want open-ended tasks that require synthesis and higher-order thinking. Mixed groups benefit from jigsaw tasks, where each student has a piece of the puzzle and teaches the others.
And I assume it's important to make success criteria clear, so students know what they're aiming for?
Absolutely. Whether it's a checklist, a short rubric, or even just an example of what great looks like, students need to know how to succeed. It also helps to assign roles within groups, like timekeeper, recorder, or presenter, to ensure everyone contributes.
What about avoiding stigma? I know that's a concern with grouping, especially if students feel labeled as low or high.
That's such an important point. The key is to use neutral names for groups, like practice, deepen, or create, and to rotate membership frequently. You don't want anyone to feel stuck in the same group forever. Celebrate growth, not just performance, and make it clear that every group's role is valuable.
I love that. And finally, how do teachers monitor and adjust these groups? What's the feedback loop?
It comes down to regular formative assessments, exit tickets, quick quizzes, or even observation checklists. Check if the standard deviation is shrinking or if fewer students are stuck. Self and peer assessments can also build metacognition, so students start to reflect on their own learning.
This has been such a rich conversation, Lisa. Flexible grouping clearly has so much potential to transform classrooms, but it's all about using it thoughtfully and adapting as you go.
Exactly, James. If any teachers listening want to try this, start small. Run a 20 to 30 minute cycle, collect some data, and see how it works. And if it doesn't go perfectly, tweak it and try again. The goal is always to serve the students' learning needs.